Chapter 13. We made it to the flashing yellow light at Alabama 193 and drove south, with Mobile Bay off to our left. The land grew progressively swampier, with trailer parks dominating the few outposts of civilization we passed. In most, the trailers had been pulled together to form a box or other geometric shape, and it reminded me of Wild West explorers circling the wagons to protect themselves from Indians. I had no idea where that thought came from. Perhaps I'd been a history teacher in my previous life before I turned into a psychopath. Regardless, it was obvious we weren't in Bayou La Batterie anymore. Within a couple of minutes, we were on the bridge to Dauphin Island, and I knew we were in trouble. "What's that up ahead?" George asked, peering forward. "Dead cars," I said. There were at least a couple cars in both lanes. It appeared as though there might be a way through the wreckage, but it would involve slowing down to negotiate the passage. The cars blocked my vision of what was in front of them, adding to my unease. But that wasn't the worst of it.
"Did you have to say dead?" he asked.
"Well, it beats the ones that just pulled onto the bridge behind us." As we'd passed Cedar Point, the last strip of land before the bridge, two large trucks had pulled in behind us and were blocking both lanes of traffic. While there were large shoulders on both sides of the road, I had a feeling they'd probably move to block any moves I made to get around them.
"So we don't want to go forward,
and we can't go back," I finished. I looked in the rearview mirror and sighed. "Forward it is." Whereas the last barricade had an air of professionalism, the blockage in front of us gave the impression of hoodlumism. As we approached, a woman stepped out from behind the cars and pointed at a sign on the side of the road. "Stop and pay tax," it read. I could see the cars blocking the road a little better now. There were two in the left lane, with two in the right lane a little farther back, and two more in the left lane. There was just enough space for our truck to pass by, but I wasn't going to be able to do it at speed, and I could see movement behind the cars. When we slowed to go through the obstacles, they'd have us, no matter whether we paid our tax or not. Every car I could see had bullet holes, and at least two of them had caught fire at some point. This wasn't going to end well for someone. All I could hope for was that it would be them and not us. I checked the trucks behind us. They had slowed when we did and were maintaining a respectful distance. We couldn't make a run for it that way, but at least they weren't pushing us into the trap any faster than they had to.
"You going to pay the tax?" George asked.
"Depends on what it is, I guess." I stopped the car and got out. "I think this one is going to go badly," I added. "Slide over into the driver's seat and be ready." I also told John to be ready, then walked toward the woman. She appeared to be Hispanic and was only about 5 feet tall with dark hair. She could have been pretty except for the cruel look she had in her eyes as she surveyed the truck and then focused on me.
"That's far enough,"
she said when I was about 15 feet away from her. "Is that so your friends behind the cars can keep me covered?"
"Perhaps,"
she shrugged.
"Are you going to pay the bridge tax?"
"Depends, how much is it, and how do I know you'll let me continue on once I pay it?"
"How about the little girl?"
she asked.
"Give her to us and we'll let you pass."
"Not happening," I replied, trying to catalog how many people were hiding behind the cars. There were at least three, plus the woman.
"How about the little boy, then?"
I paused, as if considering, while I tried to figure out how she knew we had a young boy and a young girl. I couldn't see much behind her. Her people wouldn't be able to see well into the bed of the truck. Did they have a rifle with a scope? That would be bad, as they could pick off my traveling companions before they could do much. Still, I didn't see a rifle poking out anywhere. Then I caught a flash of something in her ear. They had a radio or three, and the truck drivers behind us were probably radioing her instructions. That changed things. If she were just the mouthpiece and the real leader was behind us,
I think I'll have to pass on that too, I finally replied. We have some trade goods. Perhaps you'd rather have some smokes or some wine, or both?
I turned partially toward the truck as I spoke to cover the movement of my hand to the small of my back.
Pass, the woman replied. We want the girl.
A gun fired as I sprang toward her, but they hadn't expected me to come closer, and it whizzed past my head. I fired as I ran past her, and she fell backward as the bullet hit her in the chest. Several guns fired as men came out from behind the cars, and I ran forward and jumped onto the hood of the closest one. I fired down into the head of the first man that came around it, dropping him. That got their attention. A bullet skimmed past me, and I dropped to the road between the car and the side of the bridge. I went all the way to the ground so I could look under the car and saw feet moving toward me from both the front and the rear. I shot the feet out from under the woman coming around the back of the car and didn't pause a second when a woman's face hit the asphalt. I shot her once through the forehead. I rolled to my back as the other one came around the front of the car. He expected me to be in a crouch, and his shot went over my head. Before he could adjust, I hit him twice in the chest, and he fell backward. Gunshots came from the direction of George and the truck. John was engaged in a firefight with one of the truck drivers, whose passenger was slumped against the door of the cab with a spray of red on the window. The driver stayed down low in his cab, making for a hard target, but he couldn't aim very well from that position either, so the battle was currently a draw. Eventually, one or the other would get lucky, and I didn't want to pin my hopes on a 16-year-old with one day's experience. The other truck driver was quite obviously dead. I slid in a new magazine as I went around the back of the car. I needed to end this quickly. My hopes were answered. There didn't appear to be any more of them. I had just started to wave to George when I felt the barrel of a gun against the back of my head.
Drop it,
the first woman said. I set the pistol on the truck of the car next to me and raised my hands.
I thought I shot you, I said.
You did, you asshole, and it hurts like shit.
I risked a glance behind me. You don't look dead.
Never heard of a bulletproof vest?
Come to think of it, I had heard of them, and with a flash of insight, I realized that must be why I instinctively shot everyone in the head when I could. I don't remember any of them getting back up after that. Whereas the woman with the gun on me? Yeah. I may be a psychopath, but at least I made sense sometimes.
Now call to your friends and tell them to stop shooting, she said.
If I do?
Well, we're taking the little girl and the little boy now because you made this so difficult. But if you do what I tell you, I'll let the other guy and the older boy go.
What about me?
Oh, you're dead. You killed my husband and my wife. If you do what I tell you, though, I won't make you suffer. Not much, anyway.
Can't argue with that, I replied. Not much, anyway. I waved my hands over my head to get George's attention.
Stop firing, I yelled.
John turned to look at us, and George put down the pistol he'd been pointing in our direction.
Good boy,
the woman started, but I spun to the right, chopping down and away from me across her wrist. Her pistol fired off target, and I followed with a left-handed punch to her throat. She went down, and I grabbed a pistol off the trunk. Either she was tougher than I thought, or I hadn't hit her as hard as I thought, because she was raising her pistol toward me as I looked back. I dove to the side as she fired, and I could feel a tug on my shirt as the bullet whipped past me. I hit the ground on my left side with the pistol extended and fired. The bullet hit her between the eyes, and she dropped the gun. I shot her again just to make sure, and climbed to my feet with my left arm on fire. Again. John was trading shots with the truck driver, mostly just wasting ammunition, and I waved to George to pull forward. He slid into the driver's seat, keeping low, and shifted the truck into gear as I rounded up all the weapons and ammo I could. As he reached the gap between the cars and the barricade, it must have dawned on the truck driver that we were escaping. He shifted into gear and floored the gas pedal. Go, 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 I yelled as I dove into the back of the truck. Something broke my fall with dual explosions, and I realized I had just smashed two bags full of potato chips. George stayed on the gas, and the truck leaped forward into the maze. We weaved through the second rank of cars as the truck hit the cars behind us. He slammed into them, driving them forward.
but we made the next turn and they missed us. One more hard turn to get around the last row of cars and we were in the clear. We went over a small rise in the bridge for boats to go under, then Dauphin Island was in sight. George slowed the car. "Want to drive?" he asked through the window. "Not really," I replied. As the adrenaline left my system, all I wanted to do was lay on the crushed bags of chips and sleep for about 5 days. I looked to the side. All three kids looked okay. Well, not really okay, but I didn't see any blood leaking from any of them. So we at least had that going for us.
I could really use a hand, George said.
Something about the way he said it set me on edge, like he was almost saying it through gritted teeth, and I rolled over and slid up to the window into the cab. He was holding his left arm across his chest while he drove with his right. He turned toward me a little, and I could see a drop of blood drip from his left elbow onto his lap. His leg already had a small wet spot there.
"Pull over," I said.
I snorted as I looked in front of us. Not surprisingly, there was no traffic.
"The hell with that," I added. "Force a habit. Don't worry about pulling over, just stop the damn truck."
He nodded once, then slowed us to a stop. Grabbing one of the first aid kits, I vaulted out of the truck, adrenaline surging again.
"What's wrong?"
John asked.
"Nothing,"
I said as I pulled the driver's door open. "Just stay in the back." If it were bad, I didn't want them to see it.
"Oh my God, Daddy,"
Alice screamed.
"You've been shot."
Well, that wasn't helpful. "Yes, he has," I said, looking back. "And I'm going to fix him right up. But I need you to be calm and not scream anymore while I do it, okay?" She nodded her head, but tears were already flowing down her cheeks. There were also tears on a younger brother's face, and he was snuffling heavily. Even John looked like he was losing the battle to hold back his tears. Both eyes were glistening in the late morning sun. Watching me work on their father wasn't going to make it any better either.
"I need your help," I said. "I need all of your help. It's going to take me a minute or two to fix up your dad, but I don't want the bad men to surprise us. I need all three of you to watch behind us for them. Don't take your eyes off the road. It's really important. Can you do that for me?"
They all nodded, so I pointed back down the road.
"Okay, then. All eyes back there. Let me know if you see anyone coming."
John nodded once to me, then looked pointedly at his siblings.
"Good job,"
he mouthed as I passed him. He turned his face back to look behind us. I figured he understood what I was doing, but he probably didn't want to see his father's blood either. George slid from the front seat and leaned back against it, his face pale.
"Where are you hit?"
I asked quietly.
"Upper arm,"
he said, squinting against the pain.
"I leaned out to get one of the truckers, and the other one got me. Hit me in the humerus."
I opened my mouth to say something, and he added,
"No, I don't think that's very funny."
I closed my mouth again.
"I'm pretty sure it's broken,"
he added.
"Awesome," I replied.
"Well, let's get your jacket off and take a look." He moved to the side a little so I could set down the first aid kit. His face scrunched up as I slid the jacket down and off. It was bloody, but not too bad. At least it hadn't hit any of the main arteries. I opened the kit and grabbed some gauze.
"Here, hold this over the wound."
I surveyed the rest of the contents of the kit, then picked up a packet. "Here's some chewable aspirin. They're small, but maybe they'll help a bit." He opened his mouth and I dropped them in. I pulled on a pair of gloves. "This is going to hurt," I said. He turned his head and flinched as I probed the wound. The bullet had passed through the arm and had grazed the bone on its way through. Aside from an X-ray or a surgical procedure, there was no way to tell if there were bone splinters inside. But nothing was poking from either of the holes, nor did my probing appear to cause more pain than it should. So I hoped it was a clean break. I figured the worst thing would probably be infection, as there was no way to tell what the bullet pulled into the wound when it passed through. I certainly wasn't going to dig around looking and make it worse. Happily, the wound didn't look like it needed stitches, so I wiped down the area around the holes with antiseptic cleansing wipes, and applied antibiotic ointment liberally and covered them with large adhesive bandages.
Well, the good news is it isn't that bad, I said. Aside from the whole getting shot sort of thing,
he said through gritted teeth as I worked.
Well, yeah, that. At least it didn't hit an artery, and the bullet appears to have gone through without splintering the bone. You need to watch for signs of infection, like fever or chills. If you change the bandages yourself and see an increased redness, swelling, or drainage, especially nasty pus-like drainage, we'll have to find you a doctor. Maybe go back to Bayou La Batre or something. I don't know where the info came from, but it flowed like I'd said it many times previously.
He nodded, and I rigged up an extra jacket to immobilize his arm, then helped him back into the truck on the passenger's side.
Are you going to be okay, Daddy?
Alice asked. He mustered a weak smile.
Yeah. Fred hooked me up as good as new. I think I'll just sleep for a bit, though.
With the shape he was in, I didn't feel the need to correct him, but damn, I was getting tired of that name. I got him as comfortable as I could, put away the first aid kit, and got the kids settled in the back with a snack to take their minds off what had already been a traumatic day. I couldn't believe it wasn't even quite noon yet. Grabbing one of the bags of crushed chips to snack on, I jumped in the cab and started driving. I'd only eaten a couple handfuls of chips when we crossed Cedar Island and approached Dauphin Island. I slowed again and sighed. The way was blocked with yet another barricade. The more things change, the more some things stay the same in this fallen world.